You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Continue here on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. I'm joined by two Mustangs, as it is. So that always means life's going to be interesting. So Ernest Johnson joins me, and he is the president of the Marine Corps Mustang Association. Ernest, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Mike. How are you this morning?
I got no issues right now. I got no issues. We're going to find out if you guys are going to give me some, but right now I'm good. And then Joe Featherston joins us. Did I say that right, Joe? Because I want to say Featherstone.
No, that's correct. You've got it well. Thank you.
All right. Joe, retired major. Ernest, retired captain. Both Mustangs. So we need to learn about both of you to find out if we can take you seriously here on All Marine Radio. Because you know, being Marines, you guys got to go through it. So. We need to meet you. First of all, Ernest, born and raised where?
Mac, I was born and raised in Richmond, Virginia. I was the oldest of seven children. And, when I finished high school, the Magale Walker High School in Richmond, Virginia, I made a decision that I was going to go, into the military. Then it was a decision I had to make, which branch of the armed forces I wanted to go into. I didn't want to go into the Army or the Navy, the Air Force. The only thing left was the Marine Corps. And I took that as a personal challenge because I understand then that the Marine Corps was tough physically and mentally. And so I took the challenge. And so I entered Parris Island on the 27th of June, 1956.
June 1956.
I met my drill instructor.
All right. So, and again, born and raised where?
Richmond, Virginia.
All right, Joe, how about you? Born and raised where?
Born and raised in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the birthplace of the Marine Corps.
Home of the Flyers, the Phillies, and the Eagles, right?
Oh, boy. That's pronounced Eagles, I-G-G-L-E-S.
All right, how does the Marine Corps get on your radar, Joe?
I was a sophomore in high school, and I dropped out of high school when I was 16 years old. I don't know what it was. I was bored, I guess. But I took all the paperwork when I was 16. I was in the Marine Corps on my 17th birthday. And I came in on a two-year contract and went to Parris Island and came out there basically as an infantry guy briefly and then an artillery guy even more briefly and ended up being a communicator in Charlie Battery 10th Marines in early 1957.
All right. Ernest, there was nobody that pointed you towards the Marine Corps? You chose that on your own?
Well, I didn't tell the complete story.
Ah, here we go. That's right.
I had a good friend of mine while I was in high school, and he and I got to be real close friends. Our family got to be close friends. We double dated, got to be real close. So he and I had that conversation as to what we would do after high school, and we both agreed that we would go into the armed forces. And as I said earlier, we decided not to go into the Army, the Navy, the Air Force. The only thing left was the Marine Corps. And he looked at me, he said, "We go in the Marine Corps, they're going to kill us." Well, I fired back, and I said, "Oh, you can't take it, huh?" And, of course, 17 years old, what is he going to say? And so we went back and forth, and next thing we knew, we were at the Marine recruiting officer signing ourselves in.
There's a long history of that.
And then we got on the train, and we rode the train from Richmond, Virginia to Yamasee, South Carolina. And anyone who was in the Corps during that time can appreciate Yamasee. I still appreciate it even now. And there I met the Marine Corps. and they turned me away, set loose. But in the long run, I'm glad they didn't turn me loose.
Talk to me about, Joe, talk to me about who influenced you. Did anybody point you towards the Marine Corps, or is that something you found on your own?
No, with a name like Featherston, the word feather merchant creeps in somewhere along the line, and I was like 129 pounds and 5'9" at the time, dripping wet behind the ears. And I was trying to prove something as well because, you know, you grew up in a tough area of West Philadelphia, and you really want to try to make your mark, and the Marine Corps was the toughest service. And I dealt with a Master Sergeant E7 named Joe Monaco, who didn't turn me away at the door. Turned out to be a lifelong friend. And since I was in Paris on the 1st of October, Ernest has me by a couple of months, and he reminds me that I'm a boot. So,
hey, you have to.
When I went to Paris Island, Ernest will share the story because Ribbon Creek had just happened, and of course, court martial was ongoing, and the Marine Corps was coming to its knees publicly, and it was a bad time to be there, and nothing much had changed from June until October. It gradually changed after that, but one of the things that happened while I was there was the movie that D.I. was filmed with Jack Webb, and it was filmed in my squad bay, and one of my junior drill instructors ended up being in the movie. So it was an interesting period of time for me. At the end of the year, that included a Marine Corps birthday, it included Christmas, it included Thanksgiving, and not New Year's Eve, because we outposted on the 31st of December for Camp Geiger. But it was an interesting experience, and I grew up fast.
All right. You know, I'll tell you what. I've done a number of programs about the Ribbon Creek thing, because with the latest stuff going on at Paris Island, you know, you hear Ribbon Creek, and I thought, you know what, I've heard that most of my, you know, my Marine Corps life, but I don't really know the details of it. And I found it really interesting. There's a former Marine who was a recruit, probably close to the same time you guys were there, and he wrote a book about it. And I had him on, it really, really interesting.
Was it John Stevens?
It was.
Stevens is a personal friend. He's a remarkable story about Ribbon Creek from him.
Oh, my God. And it was just because it's stuff. Like, first of all, those recruits, they deserved to get thrashed. They didn't deserve to get killed. But, you know, they were, you know, not acting the way recruits ought to act. And then it was, you know, your image of this guy is a drunk. You know, he was drinking. But that, you know, he talked about, you know, what he did, and, you know, his failure was he didn't go out into that swamp to make himself familiar, you know, with it before he took him out there. That
and
was
he
his,
had a couple of drinks. He was
right,
not drunk.
Right.
But he had a couple of drinks.
Right. Over the course of what, like an 8-hour period. And so, but you don't, until you pull it back, I mean, and the Marine Corps was a different place back then. And then he talked about, very interesting, talking about Chesty Puller's role in the whole thing, where he was initially going to testify for the prosecution, then winds up testifying for the defense. But it was very, very, very riveting, very, very riveting. I'm curious, Ernest, what was Paris Island like, when you got there?
Well, pretty much the same as Joe mentioned. We were just a few months apart there. I went in the 27th of June, and I was in platoon 193, 2nd Battalion, Charlie Company. And at the time that I went through, not knowing any better, it was, in fact, tough physically and mentally. But I programmed myself that no matter what came my way, I was going to endure that. And that's something that my dad had instilled with me. And so my drill instructors were very professional, as I see it now. And they taught me a lot about myself, about what I could encounter, what I could endure, how I could overcome hardship and pain and agony and still rise to the top. And I still have a lot of admiration for those drill instructors. A few years later back, I had the opportunity to serve as a drill instructor at Paris Island. I was pretty much intimidated when I was asked to go because the MOS that I served in was in the stewards field. And in the stewards field, we worked in the BOQ to serve the meals to the officers and make sure that the BOQ was squared away. We didn't make up beds or shine shoes or anything like that, but it was sort of, it was in fact a servitude type MOS. Again, my dad had taught me to do the very best that I could, and so I did. And so I came out top of my class.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, I had made PFC out of boot camp just
okay.
by following the instructions of the...
All right, let me stop you, Ernest.
yeah, you need to, because I get on the road.
No. That's not why I stopped you. As a black man in the late 50s going through that, that had to be, looking back on it now, you were promoted meritoriously out of boot camp?
I was.
Talk to me about, did you ever feel, because, I mean, racism was part of the Marine Corps, like it was part of our culture. Did you ever feel it? And what were your thoughts about it? I'm sure you'd been overcoming those attitudes your whole life.
I knew it was there, Mac, and I saw portions of it. I never actually saw African-American drill instructor while I was on the drill field. I never saw an African-American beyond the rank of sergeant while I was on the drill field. And that sort of resonated in my mind as to why. But I grew up in a culture where those things were happening, because in the culture that I grew up in Richmond, I knew that I had to sit in the back of the bus. And so what I did, I just kind of tuned it out of my mind and not allow it to cause me not to take advantage of opportunities that were there. So I was probably one of the most gung-ho privates in my platoon, and that's how I ended up being promoted to private first class. But I was very much aware of it. But on the same token, I had formulated in my mind I was not going to allow that to be a deterrent for me to do what needs to be done and take care of advantages that were there. And later on in my career, I began to see even more and more of it. And later on, I'll talk to you about, you know, once I became a commissioned officer, some of the things that happened there. But just all of that, I made sure that it did not hinder in any way my advantages of taking advantage of opportunities that were there for me. And it was there. It was definitely there. I was never called, you know, out of my name or anything of this nature. But there were some that were in my platoon that were, in fact, you know, called out of their name. But, again, it did not deter me.
Wow. No, it's just an interesting story. My guests this morning are the president and vice president of the Mustang Association. I've got an email, and Joe, let me ask you this. They are Ernest Johnson and Joe Featherston. And where does the term Mustang come from, Joe?
Well, the jocular version of this is that originally, back in the days of the wooden ships and iron men, that the term jackass officers applied to Navy officers who were commissioned from the ranks, and they were looked down upon by the Naval Academy people with a better education. That word jackass somehow morphed into a more polite Mustang way back a number of years ago. And although it's used in other services predominantly as a Navy and Marine Corps term, it's been hijacked by some of the other services for former enlisted soldiers or airmen. But the Mustang basically came from that derision. It was basically a hard to control, not a thoroughbred horse type of thing, and that kind of was typified to a lot of our people.
All right. So that's a compliment.
It certainly is a compliment.
Given that the
compliment.
Given that the other ones were referred to as jackasses. You guys are a higher breed of four-legged animal. All right, talk to me about, Joe, give me one person in your career that made a huge dent on you in terms of what it was to be a Marine and specifically a leader of Marines.
Sergeant E4 Eugene Alvarez was my senior drill instructor in 1956 at Parris Island. He's still a close personal friend some 60 years later,
wow.
More than 60 years later. And he was the guy who basically started me down the road. He's one of the predominantly influential people in my Marine Corps career. There have been a number of them I've been privileged to serve with. with and be mentored by a number of them. But Gene Alvarez is up there. He's a prolific author, by the way. He's also a good friend of John Stevens. And they sometimes will do book signings together at Parris Island or Beaufort or in town. So it's a good guy. Gene Alvarez is one. My recruiter, Master Sergeant Joe Monaco, who's passed away, was a second one. But I've had a lot of them, seriously, Mac, I've had a lot of them over time. They've been just great role models for me.
All right, you can only give me those two, though. Ernest, give me, since Joe violated the rule and gave me two, you go ahead and give me two as well. Guys, you made a big dent in that thick head of yours as a leader.
Well, thank you, Mac.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Joe. The one person, and I've mentioned that to you earlier, was my drill instructor. Sergeant Dickert, his name was. And he was a hard core Marine, but he was straight and he was fair. Sergeant Dickert was from Mississippi. And at that time, you can imagine what the relationship was between African Americans and Caucasians. But I never saw that in Sergeant Dickert. He was just always immaculate, squared away, and pushed me. I didn't know later on that the reason he was pushing me to see how far I would go because I was a candidate to be a PFC.
Wow.
Once I got out of boot camp, as I mentioned, I was assigned to be a steward, and I was came out top of my class.
Yeah, you know, Ernest, stop. Because most people listening don't even know what that is, because those don't exist in the Marine Corps anymore. So talk about what did a steward do?
Well, okay. The steward at that time was a 36-11, or you could be a 36-13. The 36-11 were the ones that worked in the galleys, if you would, prepare the meals. The 36-13 were the ones that actually were in the wardroom or the dining room and would actually serve the meals. And then subsequent, when it was not chow time, we would go into the BOQs and we would just kind of straighten out the BOQs, vacuum, clean out the head and things of this nature. As I mentioned earlier, it was a servitude type position.
Right. Right.
And we got that from the Navy. The Navy, as far as I know, still actually carry that MOS. Those who were in senior enlisted ranks were also assigned to work in the general's quarters. I recall very vividly General Krulak was assigned to Quantico, and because of the rank that he had at that particular time, he had two stewards to work in his home, and they did those things that normally the spouse would do. But, you know, they would prepare the meals, they would serve the meals, and they would just be there to provide any type of service. If they had a special party of some type, they would do that. And that's what the steward's field was all about. It was degrading for those of us who were African Americans because the only persons that served in those MOSs were, in fact, African Americans. And when I was initially assigned, I didn't know, you know, what it was. And so I took it saying, okay, I'll do the very best that I possibly can. So that's what that MOS was.
All right. All right.
Subsequent to that.
Okay. Now go on. Give me
that MOS, of course, has been taken out of the MOS structure. I would have to say, Mac, that the class that I was in back in 56 and 57 was very instrumental in causing the Marine Corps to take a serious look at that particular MOS and the personnel that were serving in that MOS and what their overall morale was. And I recall there was a captain, don't recall his name at the time, that he constantly went to headquarters Marine Corps and he would convey his thoughts and what information he had gained from us, you know, and subsequently that MOS was done away with. But once I was serving at Quantico, I met a master sergeant, African American, James E. Johnson. And some of the listeners may know or heard of James E. Johnson, because once he retired from the Marine Corps, he became the Secretary of Defense for Manpower and Reserve Affairs under President Nixon's administration.
Wow.
And he served, I think, during the whole time that President Nixon was president. We were, of course, very proud of him because of the manner in which he worked. But he motivated me to do more than what I was actually doing at that particular time. At that time, I was a young 18, 19-year-old Marine, and the main thing I wanted to do most of was to go on liberty. My wife then was a student at Virginia Union University in Richmond. Now, Quantico is only about 75 miles from Richmond.
Right.
So you can imagine the days that I was off, you can imagine where I was. I was there in Richmond. But subsequently, my wife and I, you know, got married. God rest her soul. She has gone on now. But the person that really influenced me was James E. Johnson. He subsequently was promoted to warrant officer. So therefore, he was the first African-American warrant officer that I had ever seen.
Wow.
And I told him.
Wasn't his nickname Hashmark Johnson?
No, this is a different person, Joe.
Oh, okay.
Hashmark Johnson was a bit, a few years earlier than James E. Johnson. James E. Johnson, as I said, was promoted to warrant officer. And when he did that, that sparked me. I said, if you can do it, I will. I can do it. And he encouraged me. He said, you can. And sure enough, we attended the funeral of Chesty Puller in Saluda, Virginia. And I think every Marine on the East Coast was there. And by that time, I had been selected to be a warrant officer, and I proudly wore my bars. And I just knew that James E. Johnson was going to be there, even though he had retired. He was tall and slender, and I looked around, looked for a tall, slender African-American, and bingo, there he was. So I proudly walked up to him, gave him a real hearty salute, and said, "Warrant Officer Johnson reporting as ordered." And he just grabbed my hand and shook it. I can still feel it now because
wow.
He knew that he had made an influence on me and I had gone to the level that I had told him that I would go to. So those were the two, Mac.
Wow.
Took me a little while to say it, but.
I got to keep an eye on you. You can,
I know,
can talk a little bit.
I get choked up.
No, as well you should. My guest this morning from the Marine Corps Mustang Association is the President Ernest Johnson and the Vice President Joe Featherston. Guys, let me ask you a question. Did you serve in Vietnam? Joe, did you go to Vietnam?
I went to Vietnam. I was with the 1st Marine Brigade in Kaneohe in 1965, and I deployed with India Battery 12th Marines and 3rd Battalion 4th Marines in the Phu Bai in 65, and did one tour there and came out of there as a staff sergeant and select into the warrant officer class January 66. So, yeah, I did. I went back for a second tour in 68, 69.
What was your MOS, Joe?
I was a 2531 radio operator, comm chief for India Battery, and I worked in the Fire Support Coordination Center for the 3rd Battalion, 4th Marines out in the bush, and went back with them. Oddly enough, there's a story behind it, because I expected to be a comm officer, because I had 10 years in the field. I was 27 years old at that point. The Marine Corps was giving out MOSs to survivors. 26 guys in my class became aviation materiel officers. So I went back to zero and started all over again and went to a MOS school down at Montford Point, now called Camp Johnson.
Right.
And spent the next 13 years in Marine Aviation, which led to my civilian career after I retired.
Wow. And what is your civilian career is what?
Retired in May of 78. I went to National Airlines as a supervisor in Miami. Pan Am bought National 2 years later, so I was a Pan Am guy for 2 years. Got furloughed as part of a reduction in force, went to Air Florida, got fired from Air Florida because I was on the trail, something that nobody wanted to find out about. Did 5 years with Ryder System in the Aviation Division, ended up as a Divisional Vice President of Operations, and went to Airbus up in Washington in 1987, and was there at Airbus for 6 years. I ran two companies for Airbus for 6 years simultaneously. And started my own company. So it was the Marine Corps decision made by a third-party person affects your life going forward in so many ways that it's hard to imagine.
Wow. Give me a lesson learned from your time in Vietnam. If I ask you, hey, I have two sons in the Marine Corps, one's in Quantico, one's at Camp Pendleton. If they were going to war and I wanted you to speak to them about going to war, give me one lesson that you would share with my son.
Be as well trained as you possibly can be and rely on the other Marines near you to be the same, because nothing else counts. When the best laid plan stops when the first bullet's fired, and you have to rely on your muscle memory. The infantry tour was very, very different from being in a phantom squadron at Da Nang. I actually got shot at more in a phantom squadron than I did when I was in the infantry, because with bigger stuff. There's no way to predict what it was going to be like. You have to base yourself on all the training that you've had and on your gut instincts. But if a good Marine will follow their instincts, and hopefully good luck will follow them.
All right. Ernest, did you get to Vietnam?
Yes, sir, I did. I served on two occasions. I went the first time. I served with the 9th Marines, and we landed in Da Nang in August of 1965. I was an intelligence analyst. By that time, I had changed my MOS. I talked about my previous MOS after boot camp. But as time went on, I changed over to be an intelligence analyst, which is an 0239.
Okay.
And I served in that capacity with 9th Marines, doing 1965 to 1966. I came back home, and 1968, I was back on my second tour. This time, I served with what is known as a special landing force, which floated off of the coast of Vietnam. The 3rd Battalion, it was a rotating situation with battalions in the 9th Marines. The 1st, 2nd, or the 3rd Battalion, and we would go to Okinawa, pick those units up, and come back out. So I didn't really see a lot of action with the SLF, but with the 9th Marines, there were times that I would go out to collect intelligence information, and most of it was HUMINT, and that is human intelligence, talking to the local folk as to what was going on, what did you see, how many did you see, and when did you see it. A very interesting type of situation. And during that time, I was promoted to staff sergeant. You had asked a question earlier if I had to speak to a young Marine or any Marine who was getting ready to go into combat.
No, God no. My sons. Are you kidding me? If you were going to talk to my sons, give me a lesson learned.
And I would ditto what Joe had actually said. The Marine Corps, in my opinion, without sounding totally biased, even though I am.
You can provide
the best training for a Marine to go into combat. Train them physically and mentally. And once you get into the combat situation, both of those characteristics are going to play a very important part as to how you manage getting the mission done and getting yourself back home safely. Physically, entails being physically fit. And so when the first sergeant said we're going to go on a 5-mile run, formulate your mind that you're going to do every bit of it, that you're going to be running and not necessarily walking. And then the other one is psychologically that I can do this. And once you make up your mind that you can do this and rely on the training that you've got, that you've received, and the other Marines that are working with you, then you're going to make it. You're going to survive.
All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to switch gears and talk about the association now that we know you both. And you both seem like trustworthy human beings.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I've worked so hard to get to that.
You're welcome. I need to appreciate that. All right. So you guys are all right. You guys check out. So we want to make everybody smart about what the Mustang Association is, and let everybody know about the good work you guys do, and then how they can become members and support you guys, because you know one of the things we're all learning, I think, in the last 15 years is that you know the associations that have been part of the Marine Corps, the Mustang Association being one of them, the Marine Corps League being another one. There's so much good information about so much stuff from post-combat related mental health to who in your community helps with jobs, you know, who at the VA to go see, who not to see. And all that stuff is tends to be resident in these different associations and people that you meet and you network through. And you can become really smart really quick and not have to learn this stuff on your own. So when we come back, we're going to talk about all that, if that's okay with both of you.
Absolutely.
All right. That's fine. You're going to call us back?
No. You're going to hold on there, son. Come
okay.
on.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. Don't be doing anything crazy, Ernest. You just stay on the phone. All right. All right. We're going to take a quick break. More of Almarine Radio coming up next right here on a Monday edition on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Say about militarybyowner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
Veteran Sergeant Gnarly Ermey here with important information for veterans. At 2,600 American job centers nationwide, veteran and transitioning military personnel can find help with career counseling, resumes, and job placement. You want more information, don't you? The Department of Labor offers a variety of programs to help our military heroes find good jobs or continue their education. What are you waiting for?
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. ...8:38 here on a Monday morning on the West Coast. We're talking about the Marine Corps Mustang Association here. And I'm privileged to be joined by their president and their vice president, Ernest Johnson, the president, and Joe Featherston, the vice president. I've got an email for you guys. Hey, Mac, first of all, the history of Mustangs goes way back in the Marine Corps, and so I can't tell you how much I'm enjoying about this, looking forward to hearing about the organization itself. I'm curious, when was the organization actually established, and is it an official Marine Corps organization, or is it a 501c3 corporation that Mustangs established years ago? So I don't know which one of you wants to field that, but when was the history of the organization?
Let me take it, if I may. This okay. is Joe.
Yes, Joe, please do.
The organization was founded in 1985, November the 10th, 1985, the Marine Corps birthday, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the birthplace of the Corps. So it was a shoe-in for me. We have members located across the country and in several foreign countries. Memberships open to former enlisted Marines, commissioned, or appointed to warrant officers. Ages range from World War II veterans in their mid-90s down to younger Marines in their 30s. Our members include ranks from Warrant Officer 1 all the way up to four-star general officers, with several former commandants as members. General Al Gray is a member. General Carl Mundy was a member. General Jim Mattis, currently Secretary of Defense, is a member. And a number of others.
Those guys are all prior enlisted?
Yep, absolutely. In fact, we have nearly a dozen men and women as members with the rank of Brigadier General and above.
Wow.
Memberships come close to 4,000 over time. We're in our 32nd year. We're going in our 32nd year. About 1,500 are currently active based on losses due to age and other health issues. We're still going strong coming into our 32nd year. Our first muster was in near Quantico, Virginia in 1987 with General Al Gray as commandant as our guest of honor. That muster included the entire 8th and I Drum and Bugle Corps with Colonel Truman Crawford, the director, who was a Mustang, former Air Force enlisted, former Marine enlisted. Wow. We've had annual musters across the country every year, East Coast, middle of the country, West Coast. Last one was in New Orleans. We are not an official Marine Corps organization. We are, however, a tax-free, IRS tax-free, 501c3 or C4. We are heavily involved with the Marine Corps through the National Marine Corps Council, which is an organization of about 30 other organizations, Drill Instructors Association, Women Marines, to all the division associations, Air Wings, and so on. So we're full participants in that. We are plagued by the same recruiting issues that many fraternal organizations have, and that is the younger generation relies on social media to an extent unprecedented before, and many of them don't go to reunions or cannot go for one reason, but they don't join either. They don't join the American Legion or the VFW or the Marine Corps League or others because they're too busy with their lives. So our constant challenge is to actively look for and recruit people into the Mustang Association, many of whom have never heard of it, which is kind of astounding. But the Marine Corps Mustang Association has been around for more than three decades, and they're some of the finest people out there. They cover every MOS in the Marine Corps. It's not true infantry or artillery or engineers. It covers a whole wide range of people. So there's a kind of a summary for you. Would that help, Mac?
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I didn't 1985. Wow. In Philadelphia. Now, Joe, were you a charter member? Were you a part of it when it started?
Yeah, I'm a charter member. Charter member number 24.
Oh, man. So that means Ernest, you're in trouble. Holy smokes. Ernest, let me ask you. Talk to me about, what is the Marine Corps Mustang Association? What do you guys do on an annual basis?
As you had mentioned, that we are a viable fraternal organization. And in that manner, we have held musters annually so that the comradeship of our members can remain intact. Unfortunately, within the last few years, we have not actually been able to maintain the musters because of poor attendance, and that's understandable. So right now we are actually embarked on an aggressive recruiting program, and in doing so we will always remain a fraternal organization, but we need to go into a state of transition as we face significant challenges as we look forward to sustaining the long-term viability of the Mustang Association. And in doing that, we need to be focused a bit more on going out into the community to promote and advertise the Marine Corps Mustang Association. And we have not focused on that as much as we should. And so a part of my vision is to encourage our members to form chapters of the Mustang Association, and those chapters will be either regionally or locally located so that they can have immediate access to the members that we have scattered throughout the United States. And as a result of that, they can initiate community-type programs. They can be more visible at the war memorial-type programs, Memorial Day programs. And these are things that we have not done in the past, but I think that these are the things that we need to do in order to keep us viable in the years to come. We also need to focus on using the social media. Right now we do have a Facebook account. We also have a LinkedIn account. As a matter of fact, the last time I checked, we have about 70 or 75 folk who have joined us on the LinkedIn account, and that's encouraging to me. We're also partnered with the Together We Serve, and a lot of Marines out there are, in fact, connected with that social media, so therefore we will get to know who is out there and encourage them to come and join in with us. And, of course, the program that you have, Mac, is a great opportunity, and this is why we're here to promote the Mustang Association so that we can continue to be a viable organization, a fraternity-type organization, and an organization that's going to be working in the community, working and advertising the Marine Corps Mustang Association.
Can I interject, please, and say that we do have chapters, active chapters in the Mustang Association now. We have an active chapter in California. We have an active chapter in Arizona. We have a very active chapter in Florida. So we're well on the way to doing this in other geographical locations.
Yes, we are. There are opportunities in Texas. There are opportunities in San Diego, California. We already have one, as Joe mentioned, at Camp Pendleton. We also have opportunities in South Carolina, which is very close to Parris Island, and not only to Parris Island, but there's a Marine Air Station there in Beaufort, South Carolina. And so I've reached out to members in those localities and asked them to step up, use their ingenuity, and support me in contacting not only the members of the Marine Corps Mustang Association, but other Mustangs, because there are a lot of Mustangs out there that do not know about the Marine Corps Mustang Association. So this program that you're sponsoring, Mac, is going to be a great tool to help get the word out that we are, in fact, looking for a few good men.
And women. Get with the program. Tell me about the Spirit Award. What is that? The Mustang Spirit Award.
Mustang Spirit Award was originally put together to recognize the accomplishments of men and women going through the basic school. It started out originally with the only two warrant officer classes each year, which was the regular and reserve class.
Right.
But then we recognized that every lieutenant class is 20 to 25% former enlisted. So we expanded this to 8 classes a year where we provide the Mustang Spirit Award. The problem with that was that you could only give it to one person, and these people are all leaders. And how do you pick the best leader among other leaders? It was a challenge to do that. It is an effort to maintain the communications because all these officers are active duty, and they transfer, and trying to keep their contact information viable is a real challenge.
Right.
So the Spirit Award is something we look at every year for viability. It's something that we recognizes the contributions of exemplary men and women, and it's something we'd like to continue to try to do.
All right. So you guys continue to give that award out? It's what
we stopped giving the award out temporarily,
okay,
because of circumstances, and it's mostly financial. But the award is only on hold. It's not been canceled.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Ernest. I'm sorry for interrupting you.
Well, there's no problem. But Joe was talking about other organizations that we are connected with or partnered with. He mentioned the National Marine Corps Council. We are an active member there. As a matter of fact, in April, they will be having their spring meeting at Quantico, Virginia, which I will be attending. We also have partnered with the Marine Corps Executive Association. That's an organization that provides information to Marines for if they're looking for employment of one type or another. And, of course, there's a local Marine Corps League here in Virginia close to me that I've partnered with. As a matter of fact, we had breakfast this morning and just talking about some things that are going on in the community. And so I encourage members of the Mustang Association to do the same, because there are a lot of other Marine organizations out there that they could, in fact, become either a member of or just partner with them. So that helps put our image out there so that folk will know what we do, how we do it, and, of course, why we do it.
All right. I've got an email for you guys. Hey, Mac, great to hear from these guys who run the Mustang Association. Mustangs have made great contribution to the Marine Corps' history, and good to see that it's still going and that they're fighting to expand. Is there anything that we can do to help other than join the association? Anything anybody can do to help you guys, or just simply join the association and keep it growing?
Let me take that for just a comment.
Sure.
One of the things that we've looked at very strongly is corporate sponsorship, because corporate sponsorship affiliates a lot of very worthy military-oriented companies to us. They provide the financial support that allows us to grow more quickly and more efficiently and provide that kind of support to the fleet. So other than being a member of the Mustang Association, corporate membership is something we would be willing to discuss. Which leads me to say, before we run out of time, if I could give you a couple of references that might be useful.
Sure.
One of them would be the website, which Ernest alluded to already, and that is MarineCorpsMustang.org. MarineCorpsMustang.org. Secondly, our business manager is located in a suburb of Philadelphia, coincidentally. It has nothing to do with founding it. But the telephone number for him is toll-free 844-330-5922. Again, 844-330-5922. And he would be very helpful to you in looking at corporate membership or actual membership as an individual.
And as a matter of fact, on our website, there is, in fact, an application that you can, in fact, fill out. and send it to our business manager, who subsequently will take the action that is necessary. I can't emphasize too much that we are, in fact, looking for a few good men. And
women.
And, thank you, and women. Yes.
Okay, what's the name of the website? How does everybody find you guys?
MarineCorpsMustang.org.
Marine Corps, that's easy. MarineCorpsMustang.org. Both you guys, Ernest, you first. What haven't I been smart enough to ask you that you want people to know about what you guys do, what you guys are about, and where you guys are going?
One of the things I just want to put out to those Marines that are out there that we've been organized for 32 years. Our membership right now is aged. But they have done a fantastic job of establishing the criteria for the organization, which has sustained us for the last 32 years. So we're looking for younger Mustangs, those with ideas that are conducive to the thinking of the younger Marines. Just because we've been around 32 years, I do not want anyone to think that we are still thinking at that level, even though we're grateful for it. So the one message I want to get out is that we're looking for the younger Marines who can keep our organization viable.
All right. Joe, your thoughts? Anything I've been smart enough? You know, Ernest, the correct answer was, no, Mac, you've done a great job. Thank you. That was the correct answer, all right? So,
well, I was going to say that as we close out.
Hey, Mac, that's the technique of military instruction, right? Tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you told them.
I know. Exactly. He's not picking it up. He's like, he's, all right, how about you, Joe? Anything I haven't asked you that you want to make sure that people know?
Well, I would say that part of joining any fraternal organization is an emotional attachment to them, and we have one of the strongest ones because every Marine out there in the entire Marine Corps knows what a Mustang is. They know that we did the same things that they did. We hold the same trash. We clean the same heads. We did everything that they do. So they look at a commissioned officer or an appointed warrant officer with a great deal of respect for the accomplishment, and they listen to Mustangs. They listen to Mustangs while they're serving, and they find out that the Mustangs, after they retire, are helpful in mentoring them and helping to encourage them to aspire to be an officer of Marines. So the emotional attachment is really strong, and I think that if we can find some way of promulgating that, we're in good shape. The organization will take care of you. Once we find out who you are, we'll help you and work with you.
You know, I have to tell you, too, that one of the best compliments that I used to get, and I don't want to break my arm, pat myself on the back, but was this. McNamara, or sir, most of the time. McNamara, it happened to me, first time it happened to me was in, at Officer Candidate School. McNamara, are you prior enlisted? And when my Marines would come up to me and say, sir, are you prior enlisted? I'd just say, no, I'm just really cool, man. I'm just really cool. And they would go, oh, my God. But it was, I took it as one of the greatest compliments that I ever got because Mustangs have a way. Most of the time they're pretty slow to anger. They're pretty measured. They know the deal. And there's a steadiness that goes with being a Mustang that the rest of us all seek to emulate.
We're held to higher standards, Mac.
Right.
We are held to higher standards.
And as well you should be, because you know the deal. And so, it's a long history of it in the Marine Corps of enlisted Marines transitioning to the officer ranks and then continuing to make great contributions. But no, honestly, one of the great compliments that I used to always smile at and that somehow or other I exuded a confidence and a demeanor that would make enlisted Marines believe that, hey, he's got to be enlisted to know stuff like that. But I just told him, no, man, I'm just cool. I know the deal. All right, hey, just for me to you two, if there's anything that All Marine Radio can do to help you. You guys come back on whenever you want to, whenever you guys have something going, whenever we can be of assistance to you. You have my email, you have all my contact information. Don't call me late at night. But other than that, I'd be more than happy, because I believe in what you're doing, know the value of your organization, and anything we can do to help, we certainly will.
Mac, we appreciate your professionalism, and we appreciate your courtesy in having us on board. It's been a delightful hour.
No, other than Ernest excluding women, for God's sakes, it's been fantastic. Ernest, you need to get with the program.
Please forgive me, ladies. It won't happen again.
No. First of all, no, thank you both for coming on. And like I said, we'll have you back on, and if I have to make up an occasion, I'll make one up and bring you back on and talk about what you guys are doing, or simply talk about Marine Corps issues and get your opinion. But want to thank you and wish you both all the best of luck in the expansion of the Mustang Association, and we'll get this up on iTunes and our website and blast it all over the place and hopefully help you guys out.
Thank you very much. Semper Fidelis.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for your help.
It's been a pleasure and an honor.
All right. Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Ernest. We'll do it again.
Okay. Right. Semper Fidelis.
There you have it. Semper Fidelis. Right. That is Ernest Johnson, the president of the Marine Corps Mustang Association, and Joe Featherston. Joe from Philadelphia, and so they run the Marine Corps Mustang Association. You can, and again, let me just make sure, MarineCorpsMustang.org. If you're a Mustang, you can go ahead and, or you're not, you can go there. You get all the information you need. There's a members area. There's contact information. All of that. All right, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about my pop culture correspondent is going to join us. That would be my daughter, Catherine. Big snafu at the Oscars last night, so we're going to talk about that and what happened. Then I have some audio from Iwo Jima. Obviously, February, March time frame is the anniversary of the Battle of Iwo Jima. We'll hear a little bit more of that today as we talk about that battle. Here is a little bit of Marine Corps history. So sit back, relax, and All Marine Radio continues on a Monday right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.